Well, sir, the evening meal has been over only a little while as our scene opens now. And here in the living room of the small house halfway up in the next block, we find Mr. and Mrs. Victor Goode. Vic lounges in his easy chair with the newspaper, while Sade, occupying a corner of the Davenport, darns gentleman's socks. Sade is speaking at the moment, and rather sharply, too. Listen.
You don't need to titter and get that funny, surprised expression on your face every time I mention going to Carberry next Saturday. We're going to Carberry, and that's all there is about it.
Why, how determined you sound.
Sure, I sound determined.
It's not like you to be so high-handed.
No, there's no reason on earth why we shouldn't go to Carberry either. You've got nothing else planned for on Saturday. You're free as a horse. Well, Vic Gook, you haven't been to Carberry in ages.
You have, though.
Well, of course I have. A dozen times, and Rush, too. But you haven't.
Your sister?
What?
Bess is your sister.
Now, that's a fine, beautiful excuse, that is.
Well, it isn't, is it?
Bess and Walter are your sister-in-law and brother-in-law. And they live right here in Illinois. Not even a whole day's ride on the train. And you let year after year go past without visiting them. Why, it's shameful.
I don't notice them coming to visit us.
Well, you appreciate Walter's tied down with the barber shop and all. He can't get loose. But you're as free as a breeze. 100 million times I've itched to try to talk you into running up to Carberry, but always knew you'd kick and bellyache and raise objections. Now an occasion has come along. Something special's on the fire. You can't duck and sneak off and hide your head under your wing.
What's the occasion?
You don't know what the occasion is.
Sunday, just because young Utsi's going to slam off a tune on the half-wit piano is hardly sufficient.
Yes, young Utsi's going to slam off a tune on the half-wit piano. For months and months, she's worked and practiced and worked
somebody
and
in the
practiced.
Kitchen. Somebody in the kitchen.
Robbers, maybe. You, Willie?
Yeah.
We'll start laying our plans now, this very minute. I'll write Bess a little note, and Rush can mail it tonight so she'll get it tomorrow sometime. I'll tell her to expect the three of us on the IC train that gets in Carbon.
I got a question with me. Evening, Sadie.
Well, we got company. Hello there.
Hello, Bess.
Come in, Uncle Fletcher. I'm not going to be sidetracked on this now. We're going to Carberry, and that's all there is about it. You can wipe that foolish, perplexed look off your face, too.
Bumped into Uncle Fletcher Society up at the corner of Kelsey Street just now.
How are you, Uncle Fletcher?
Yes. Coming along Kelsey Street there, minding my own business, and ran right into this scallywag rush. If I'd done right, I'd have called a policeman and had you thrown in prison.
Yeah.
He's a good boy.
Hey, Uncle Fletcher's going to Carberry with us.
Oh?
Aunt Bess invited him to come to Yunthi's piano recital, too.
Receive a letter from Bessie, did you, Uncle Fletcher?
No.
Well, sure you did. You were just telling me about it.
Uh-huh. Sadie, remember Tracy Flanker's there in Belvedere?
No, I don't believe I do. Are you going to Carberry with us on Saturday?
Tracy Flanker's had a secret hiding place for his money a thief wouldn't discover in 30 years. It was up against the roof of his mouth. He had a little leather strap back there somewhere close to his tonsils with wires that hooked on his wisdom teeth. Baffle any burglar in the country.
Say, that's an interesting thing.
Yes, Tracy Flanker.
Uncle Fletcher, Rush tells me you heard from Bessie today.
I did. Mailman left a letter over at the house sometime during the afternoon. I wasn't there at the time. I was over at Miller's gasoline station. Fella pulled in with Missouri license plates. Elderly fella. I went in to chat
with
him.
Well, did Bessie invite you to come to Carberry on Saturday?
No.
Well, you said she did, Uncle Fletcher.
Please let me do the talking for about 5 seconds.
Well, if he's going to go, I won't have to go, will I? Make too many for Bess to find beds for if the whole gang of us traced
Please.
Up there.
Uncle Fletcher, there's something I have to get straightened out. Are you going to Carberry on Saturday?
Yes, I thought I would. Yuncey's going to play on the piano.
Yes. Well, do you plan
Yuncey
on...
Yuncey, Vic, performs a selection where she stomps on the white keys with both feet.
Is that a fact?
Yes.
I think you got that a little bit twisted. It isn't the white keys she stomps on with both feet. It's the loud pedal.
Let's say enclosed a printed program in the envelope. Good many of the different ones is going to play. Yuncey's best, though, I guess. I'd like to see her come stomping down on the white keys with both feet.
Well, are you going?
No.
Well, a minute ago you said you were.
I forget the name of the piece Yuncey's going to perform.
I remember it. The Aurora... The Aurora Borealis Elegy in Gallop.
That's right.
Composer's name is San Francisco.
Yes. No fella move there. H.D. Glatch. Remember H.D. Glatz, Sadie? Belvedere fella?
No.
H.D. Glatz moved to San Francisco despite his father-in-law. Who'd he marry, Sadie?
I don't know.
It was either Ivy Stover or Opal Sponk. H.D. Glatch married one of them, and Crawley Softman married the other. They don't cut any ice either way, though. Case of 601, half a dozen of the other. If H.D. Glatch didn't marry Ivy Stover, he must have married Opal Spunk. Well, whoever he married, he moved to San Francisco to spite his father-in-law. That's about all I remember about H.D. Glatch, and all I want to remember. I never liked H.D. Glatch. Never liked Ivy Stover or Opal Spunk either. A whole outfit of them can live in San Francisco, and I won't lose any sleep.
Uncle Fletcher, will you answer me one question?
Yes.
Are you going to Carberry on Saturday, or aren't you?
Certainly enjoy watching Bootsy stomp down on the White Keys with both feet.
It's a loud pedal she stomps down on with both feet, Uncle Fletcher.
Will you keep out of this, please? You are going to Carberry, then?
In the printed program, it tells about a fella and his grandpa going to play the piano together. I wonder if the fellow's going to sit in his grandpa's lap.
I have to find out whether he's going or not. It'll make a difference in our plans.
But like Bessie says, it's pleasant to have your own shoebox with oranges and bananas and a few sandwiches. I always like to give the conductor a sandwich. The fella gives the conductor a sandwich or a cookie or some little dainty, and he don't get cross and impatient when you ask him for trains on time. That's the main enjoyment I get on the train. I like to haul my watch out of my pocket and say, "Are we on time, conductor?"
"Then you are going."
Put the conductor in a good humor if he's munching on a piece of bread and meat. You say, "Are we on time, conductor?" And you'll sit on the arm of your chair and talk along free and easy as a horse. "No, we're 2 minutes late," he'll explain. "But we hope to make it up before we get to Freeport."
"Then you are going."
"No, I always put the conductor a little something to nibble on. Remember Arch Van Geekrock there in Belvedere?"
"No."
"Arch Van Geekrock traveled from Yellow Jump, North Dakota, to Dismal Seepage, Ohio. Good long journey. He wanted to get on the good side of the conductor, so he gave him a sterling silver watch, a derby hat, $2 in cash, and introduced him to his niece that was just 22 years old and pretty as a picture. The conductor put the watch in his pocket, slammed the derby hat on his head, bought cigars and candy with the $2, and married Denise. Arch Van Geekrock tells it to this day it was the pleasantest trip he ever took in his life. Just goes to show you how smart it is to shine up to the conductor."
"Uncle Fletcher, are you going to Carberry Saturday or not?"
"No."
"You're not?"
"I did have it in mind to help Polly Sanderson out at Smuller's gasoline station Saturday afternoon."
"Well, have you still got it in mind?"
"Polly Sanderson don't actually need me. Business is pretty slack."
"Doorbell's ringing. Doorbell's ringing."
"Go see."
"Most likely Blue Tooth Johnson."
"Fred Lucy, maybe."
"Oh, they wouldn't come without telephoning first."
"Oh. Why are you looking at me, Sadie?"
"Oh, I was wondering if I ought to ask you whether you're going to Carberry next Saturday again or not."
"You suppose Yuntzy takes off her shoes and stockings before she stomps on the White Keys with both feet?"
"It's the loud pedal she stomps on with both feet."
"Otto Hiefler there in Sycamore used to be pretty good on the piano. He had a piano he made himself out of corn cobs, baling wire, and horsehair.
Telegram.
Never looked like a piano, and it never sounded like a piano."
"Telegram?"
"But Otto Hiefler..."
"Yes, George."
"Telegram?"
"Yeah, for you."
"Where from?"
"Don't know. Can't tell."
"Well, give
me.
It here."
"Probably you recollect Otto Hiefler, Vic." "Married a woman 36 years old?"
"No."
"He married a woman 36 years old without saying aye, yes, or no to anybody. 'I'll marry this woman 36 years old,' he said to whoever'd listen. And he up and did it."
"How old is he?"
"Otto Hiefler is 40.
"Oh.
Here's the telegram."
"Who is it from?"
"Beth."
"Oh?"
"Yuntzy sprained her wrist, practicing, scraping her fingernail down along the white keys of the piano. Will not be in recital."
"Why, say, that's too bad."
"Yeah.
What's all this?"
"Little Yuntzy hurt herself on her piano."
"Broke a toe, maybe."
"Oh.
Broke a toe stomping on them white keys."
"Mm.
Well, that's that, I guess."
"How you mean?"
"Well, we won't be going to Carberry."
"Oh, yes, we
do." "But say, did that poor little
child..." "We're going to Carberry. We're going to Carberry on Saturday. All of us."